Very much. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Thursday, the 18th of May. It is 9:13 in the morning, and let me introduce you to our panel real quick before we get to that. Point out that Chris Cornell, we've just been hearing some music this morning, of Soundgarden fame, died at the age of 52. And died last night. We'll be having an obit and a remembrance later on in the program with our Ian Pickus. That'll be in our 11 o'clock hour. Also, word that broke just within the last half hour that Roger Ailes died at 77 years old, the founder and architect and recently ousted CEO of Fox News, passed away also. So we will be talking about that as we work our way through the morning and all that we have to talk about. It has not been a dull week, has it?
I have decided that at 5 o'clock in the evening, I'm going to crawl under my bed for about an hour and let the late afternoon news storm pass, and then I'll come up like after a tornado to see if there's anything left with the world.
I realized yesterday my phone was just buzzing and telling me all kinds of things about the world, and about 9 o'clock, my niece called me and she said, haven't you returned any of my texts? And I said, because I stopped paying attention to my phone because I just assumed
blowing up.
It was something else that the president had said at a commencement or something. I didn't even pay attention to it. So I have to, I have to work on my notifications.
Well, I had a great night, and inadvertently, it's a good lesson. I had to be at a meeting last night from 7 o'clock, and the meeting didn't end until after 10. And I got home about 10:30, and I hadn't watched any TV all night, and I thought, oh, that's good. I don't know what's going on. I didn't get engulfed by it. I didn't watch the Hollywood Squares boxes of commentators, and it was a good way to spend the evening, not to hear all this junk.
But you didn't hear that loud noise around 5:30.
Oh no, I heard that.
Afternoon.
That's right. I was under the desk when that happened.
It was a national collective sigh of relief, I think, was what we were hearing.
Well, let's talk about all of this. First, let me introduce the panel. Ira Fussfeld is here, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman.
Very nice to be back.
Good morning. Thank you very much for being here. Judy Patrick is back with us, second time in a week. We're lucky. And she is the editor of the Daily Gazette, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
You two are fresh from Media Project Action, so you've already had your practice, your rehearsal.
Whew. Did we have a great media project?
Well, I think if we say so ourselves, then we will.
There you go.
But I think for the first time in my memory, and I've been doing the media project a long time, we actually had breaking news in the middle of the program, which was the Roger Ailes story.
Which is obviously very much a media story.
Right.
And Teresa Bourgeois joins us, and we welcome her.
Good morning. Delighted to be
here. Thank you very much for being with us, communications consultant and a regular panelist on this program, which we're thrilled to say. All right, well, let's get to that, what Teresa was just alluding to, and that is the fact that former FBI Director Bob Mueller has been appointed special counsel to oversee the Russia probe. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein has appointed Bob Mueller to oversee the growing investigation into Russia's alleged meddling in the 2016 election and possible ties to Trump associates. It did seem, and I'm certainly not unique in saying this, but the one thing that came out immediately after this is it finally was something that Democrats and Republicans seemed to agree on. There was some I think, solace in the fact that, oh, okay, we can put this in the hands of somebody who we know, who we trust, and let the chips fall where they may and see what happens. That was the case with everyone, with the possible exception of the President of the United States, who called this the greatest witch hunt in political history this morning in his tweet. So, with those facts out, what do you make of all of this?
Doesn't it strike you again for the umpteenth time that here is Trump tweeting about it being a witch hunt, which A is a divisive comment to make in light of the relatively, as you point out, a favorable response that the Mueller appointment received. But it also is directly at odds with what the White House put out last night, which was a much more statesmanlike kind of comment about, okay, we're anxious to get to the bottom of this, let's move forward. The kind of tweet that Trump puts out this morning not only makes him look small, but it adds to the divisiveness in this country. And, you know, we're talking about Fox News. I'm going to be curious in the next day or so to see how they're reporting out the Mueller appointment. Are they going to say, as have most others, okay, we've got an honest broker here, let's see where this investigation goes? Or are they going to do what Trump did this morning and says, well, this is going to be a witch hunt, and at the end of the day, we'll tell you right now what this is going to, how it's going to come out, and don't believe a word of it.
Yeah, they were heading in the witch hunt direction at Fox News.
Fox News
night.
Was.
Oh yeah. And this morning. It's there has been great praise of Mueller on both sides of the aisle, but I think the that kind of right wing media is going. That's the path they're going to take. I thought maybe they had taken the Twitter away from the president when I didn't hear from him last night.
You know, it seemed like a really long time, but it was actually only 19 hours. Okay. You know, I know it seemed long, but it really wasn't that long. He also tweeted this morning, with all of the illegal acts that took place in the Clinton campaign and Obama administration, there was never a special counsel appointed. And if I want to be small and petty, I will note that counsel is misspelled. Teresa.
Which says he did it himself.
I think that there was a collective sigh of relief. I think that this is only a part of the solution to dealing with this issue, but it will, I think Mueller is so widely respected. And he's also respected internally in the FBI and such. And I was thinking that today Rod Rosenstein, Rosenstein, yeah. Bruce Springsteen, Rod Rosenstein. Sorry, Rod Rosenstein.
I always get them confused.
No, I got to get the last name right. So in any case, he is on Capitol Hill today, and I thought this was the ultimate in meeting prep, you know, because it sort of counterbalances the Comey memo that he wrote. But I think that now it'll get a lot quieter and it'll take a long time, but we know that a person who's truly a highly respected professional is working on this. But again, this is only a part of it. The FBI, you know, this probe is looking at where there are illegal acts. But there is still a call for an independent commission, which would have a separate role. And the independent commission would be looking at Russia's involvement in our election, not from a criminal perspective, but from a public policy approach. What do we do now? How do we handle this going forward? There's a great primer, Congressional Research Service, if anyone wants to look this up to learn the difference between all of these, has a great primer on independent counsels versus special prosecutors versus, you know, all
the Times did a nice piece on this, that too, this morning, with a graph of showing the wording and the different duties of those positions. Right. Mm-hmm. I will admit that I'm asking you, instead of actually just Googling this during the break, but I had heard somewhere on this morning that there was some concern that because now that Mueller has been named and would be the special counsel to this case, that may put off, because we were hearing yesterday that James Comey might appear on Capitol Hill as early as next Wednesday, and now that is put into some question. Has anyone heard anything about that?
I haven't heard that, but I did. One of the discussions I did hear was, does the appointment of Mueller mean that all of these various congressional investigations are going to be put on hold, that's not going to happen. They will move forward, but Mueller has much more authority in terms of bringing charges and the like, and his investigation probably will carry more weight, as it should. You mentioned, Teresa, that this is going to take a long time, which is true. It should, and they need to do it right. But for those people who don't like Trump and are saying, rubbing their hands and saying, okay, he's a goner. Well, he may be, but he's not going to be a goner anytime soon. And so there's still a lot of time for him to do whatever he's going to be doing in the White House. And depending on your perspective, that's a very scary thought, particularly if he becomes increasingly desperate.
And there's another part of this that's true, that, and this also will go quiet, and that you're not going to have a lot of public discussion if this
goes
in the right way.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
But that's
and
a concern, so, would you not agree? And Judy and I were talking about that a few minutes ago.
Well, there is a challenge between the congressional committees and the Justice Department investigation because, you know, they have two separate tasks, but they do have to coordinate in the sense that you don't want to have the House and Senate investigations in any way create a problem for you don't want the House and Senate to grant somebody immunity, or I don't know that they can do that, but they have to be deconflicted, but there is a process that gets put in place to deconflict those. But the Justice Department investigation, Mueller's investigation, will be quiet and will probably take a long time. It's very methodical, so that might be frustrating to some people. But it doesn't mean that things aren't going on. It just means that it'll be done, quietly. I don't think the House and Senate activities will be done quietly, and it will be an issue. It will be interesting to see if they can figure out a way for Comey to testify.
I mean, if we hear from Comey next week or even the week after, that's going to be damning no matter what
explosive,
happens, right?
I mean,
it's because we believe that there's many other notes and memos that have been taken that have been asked to be released. So we'll just sort of see what happens.
And I think that, there's been a fair amount of leaking, and I doubt that that will stop.
But that's what we should be investigating.
and Fox News was suggesting that they'd like to see the Comey notes on the meeting on Loretta Lynch,
they're trying to deflect what's going on with their guy to say to the other. It's like when we were kids, and I don't want to speak for you folks who no doubt were brilliant students, but I would bring home a bad report card, and I'd say to my mother, "Well, but look, they all did. They did. I don't care about the other ones. I'm only interested in you." And he's trying to deflect to what happened during the Hillary regime, and that's past. It just doesn't make any difference anymore.
But if you think, I've been thinking about this Loretta Lynch issue, because if you compare the outrage over Loretta Lynch talking to Bill Clinton, not Loretta Lynch talking to Hillary Clinton, Loretta Lynch talking to Bill Clinton for, 20 minutes on a tarmac or in a plane because the tarmac was too hot, versus the president of the United States, the person who's being investigated and his administration being investigated, having at least three direct conversations that we know of. And so where is the outrage about that from those who were so outraged about the Loretta Lynch conversation?
Let me just ask a very stupid, naive question. But I was driving to work this morning, and I was going all over the dial. I was listening to us. I was listening to CNN. I was listening to MSNBC. I was listening to Fox News. And I heard an interview with Peter King, and he was talking to Chris Cuomo. And he said, look, I think that this was in response to the witch hunt tweet. And he said, look, I support the special prosecutor or the special counsel. I support Mueller, but I do think that there is absolutely nothing here. I haven't seen one thing that would put anything into question of this president having done anything illegal or the transition team having done anything illegal. Now, what am I missing? Because I just I don't know how you say that. Even in my mind of trying to be as bipartisan as possible, I look at this situation and I say, okay, there seems to be a fair amount, if not a lot, of smoke that you would want to look further. It may turn out to be nothing. Great. But isn't there enough there? It certainly seems that besides what we have, the media, have said, that even the president has brought up, and enough questions that have been brought up in that case, that there would be something that you would want to look into.
Most of the Republicans, although there seems to be a softening, but most of the Republicans have calculated that they are better off right now not saying anything that will be perceived as anti-Trump. And I think it's in the New York Times today. I read it online yesterday, where they outline 8 reasons why the Republicans have not been more forthcoming, some of them political, some of them philosophical. But they've just come to the conclusion that as of right now, most of them, that it's in their interest and in the interest of the Republicans getting through the agenda that they want to get through, not to be critical of Trump. And I think, as the way Joe just described that interview, it just seems to me to be such a patently silly position that a king is taking as to leave him open to look really bad down the road.
King is on the right side of his base, but on the wrong side of history.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that Trump has still not lost his base yet. But I think that might happen over time, particularly as people come to realize that a number of the policies that he is promulgating are not in their best interest. But he hasn't lost his base yet. And again, as I've said before, I think as the markets move, you know, we saw that yesterday, who knows what we'll see today, the futures were down again. But as the markets move, and if his constituents, if the markets go down and they lose their constituents, then they will shift their tone.
Well, that's optimistic. Mm. I mean, you know, you read stories about that Trump's base is so entrenched behind him and is so suspicious about any opposition that they take it personally. If you're going after Trump, you're going after us because he's our guy.
And that's the dynamic they've set up. There's a tremendous piece in The Atlantic by David Graham. It's a great TikTok of the last 10 days put in the context of, you know, the first 118 days. But at the end, he notes that, you know, he says, and I'm quoting here, the president's no position to save himself. He doesn't have the skills or the understanding of the process. But he's been resilient before. And I think that's the other thing that these members of Congress remember, that how many times have we said, okay, this is going to do Trump in.
Right.
And then it does, and he survives it.
Let's pause there. We will come back and continue talking about this and many other stories. Don't worry. There's a lot more to talk about. There's a ton of other things to talk about.
Turkey,
don't
flowers,
you? Don't
bees.
You worry. We'll be back. Ira Fussville, Judy Patrick, and Teresa Bourgeois, we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Ira Fussville, Judy Patrick, and Teresa Bourgeois. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. A quick reminder, the WAMC live panel series seems to be going quite well. What we've done is, as an exclusive Lockbox premium, because you know the fun. Did you all know the fun drive is coming up? Have you heard about this?
I heard about that.
It's fun and it's driving forward.
That's right. It's the fun drive is coming up on June 5th, and we're looking to put $500,000 in the Lockbox before we start on the 5th of June. Well, we're doing fine, thank you very much. However, we need, you know, we obviously need a lot of help and a lot of support. Well, our friend Malcolm Nance, who was on the panel earlier this week, Malcolm Nance, who is counterterrorism expert, as well as a commentator for MSNBC, has said, oh, well, I would love to offer up my services. And he is going to do a panel discussion with us. It's a live panel on Thursday, June 15th at the Linda. The show will run 9 to 10:30. You can show up at 8:30. The $100 a ticket is what the pledge is. You pledge $100 for a ticket. The $100 comes to WAMC and goes to the Lockbox. You get breakfast. You get to see the panel in all its splendor and glory, and you get to spend quality time with a spy. So,
is this a full breakfast or continental?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Judy, because every time that we've described it, it's always been described as a light breakfast or a continental breakfast. And then when we're over there, it was the last time
Whoa.
It was just like
it was unbelievable.
Gourmet breakfast.
Yeah, we don't skimp on that. The people, it's all donated from our wonderful listeners and underwriters. But my God, it's really beautiful. So people can come out. It's $100. It'll help us a long way in getting to our goal in the lockbox. Now, here's the thing. We started this yesterday morning, 1 day ago, and we're already a quarter of the way through the tickets. So if you want these, we expect them to go extremely fast, probably by the end of the week. So if you want the tickets, you should go get them now. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org. There you'll see Malcolm's picture right on the front of the page. You can just click on it and order your tickets right away. Pledge for your tickets is what I should be saying. Also, you can just call 800-323-9262, the regular WAMC fund drive number, and one of the folks in the front office will take your pledge as well. So it's going to be a big day. I'm guessing, you all know this better than I do, I'm guessing there will be a lot to talk about even on June 15th.
Well, I'd have not had the pleasure of meeting Malcolm yet, but I've been a great admirer of him on this air and on MSNBC, and I suspect that he'll have plenty of interesting things to say.
He is quite outspoken and very, very thoughtful, and really has his finger on what is going on and has predicted so much of what has happened over the last several months. And we really look forward. We feel quite lucky. He has a new book out. He'll be doing a book signing following the event, so it'll be quite a morning. We hope you can join us. It's June 15th. WAMC.org. We asked for a $100 pledge for a ticket. And again, you get the breakfast, you get the panel experience, you get to meet Malcolm and all of us on the panel. So it'll be a lot of fun. So I hope you'll join us for that. And yes, it all goes into the lockbox to get us to our goal and help us, hopefully have another one-day fun trip.
When you arrive, Malcolm is going to be at the front door patting everybody down.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And this will be after the president's first foreign trip. So I'm really interested to I think it'll be interesting analysis that this will come on the heels of the president's first foreign trip. And so I'm really looking forward to his analysis of that.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because you think about what's going on domestically is going to have on the trip in terms of how the leaders who are meeting with Trump deal with him.
Well, certainly this leak issue, you just listen to the BBC and other foreign, skim foreign news, and you know that they were probably worried before, but they're openly worried now. And what implications does that have for our intelligence gathering? And then he's going to that G7 meeting and...
Well, let me ask a question, all of you. I'm interested in your thoughts. Chris Churchill said this yesterday when he was on the panel, and I've been hearing it many times, many, many times over the last 24 hours on all the cable outlets and even NPR last night and this morning, and even the BBC as well, where they said about how this trip, and I do think it's unfair because the guy hasn't even left the ground yet, but they're saying that this trip could be a disaster. Help me fill in some of the blanks there as to what the concern is of where you see the disaster. Is it just Trump being Trump, or is there more than that that would cause this trip to be a disaster?
Just take a look at this business with what he told the Russians and with information that allegedly was classified. And you get McMaster coming up to the press briefing, and I'm paraphrasing, but he essentially said he didn't know what he did if it was classified. And I'm not saying it was classified. He didn't know it was classified. I mean, he basically said he was too dumb to know what he was saying. And that would be permeate any meeting he would have. Who the heck knows what is going to come out of this guy's mouth? And he's such a narcissist, and he's so eager to be liked. I mean, we can all do our own armchair psychoanalysis and analyzation of this guy. I'm just nervous. I can't remember. I was born in 1948. Truman was the president. I don't remember Truman as president, but I remember all the others. My memory is pretty good. I don't remember ever there being a president who scared me, not because of his or his policies, but because I was afraid what this guy was going to say that might get us into trouble in the world.
You know, I may be naive, but I don't think it's going to be a disaster. I think Israel has already come out and said, you know, at least publicly saying that they support the U.S., even though the Trump may have disclosed it and, you know, killed one of their agents or done something horrible to their security efforts. I think in the Arab countries he's visiting, they are going to keep the crowds away. I don't think there's going to be protests outside. I'm hoping that it will be heavily controlled. Certainly, he is hard to control, but I don't think he's going. There's going to be a horrible misstep. I think that there's not going to be outrage throughout Europe right outside his doorstep. I'm hoping he's not going to do anything incredibly
wrong. The reports are that he's not looking forward to this trip. He doesn't like to do this kind of thing. I believe it's a 9-day trip, and it's been said he wants it to get down to a 5-day trip, which is not going to happen. I just think that there'll be body language issues. What these leaders will say in public may well be different, likely or different what they're going to say to each other privately. It just raises all sorts of red flags in my mind.
I also worry, but I mean, again, I just think because it's unfair, but we're also, it seems that the media in general is just sort of looking for something too, right? I mean, we're going to be watching everything. No,
they don't have to look too hard, though.
Well, I think it would be a complicated trip for any U.S. leader given the different things that he's doing. You know, he's going to Saudi Arabia. There's issues there between terrorism versus, you know, we're on both sides of their issues, and then Israel, of course, to work out those issues. NATO, with all of the upheaval in Europe, it's complicated. So for anyone, it would be a complicated trip that needs to be very carefully scripted. But the challenge with him is that by all reports and by evidence, he does not stick to a script. And now the script, you know, we're not saying, oh, he's childish, he needs a script. It's just that these foreign events, these diplomatic events, it's not just that, but these diplomatic events, he doesn't appear to understand how important it is, how important the script is. But also, you add in the layer of complication of all of his rhetoric. You think everywhere, you know, his anti-Muslim rhetoric. So he's going to Saudi Arabia, and he's had, you know, years of anti-Muslim rhetoric. So that does not bode well. And then he's going to Israel, and you have the problem there with the leaking of the information. That doesn't bode well, although I'm sure that they'll gloss over that. And then he's going to go to the Pope. Hopefully that'll work out okay. But then he's going to...
Well, he's got Callista Gingrich behind him.
Well, that's a whole other issue that we should discuss, the appointing Callista Gingrich as our
ambassador
to the Vatican is just stunning. But then NATO, you know, how, you know, for a year and a half during the campaign, he denigrated NATO. And there were reports I was reading yesterday about how NATO, the people putting together the meeting, are scripting it, and they're asking people to talk in smaller, they're giving them less time to talk because the president of the United States has a short attention span. And so they're shortening the presentations to deal with his short attention span, which is stunning. And then he's going to the G7, and that's where it might get really complicated. So
Steve Ducey do it for him.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was some talk that he would not go to the G7, and that you would have McMaster and maybe Tillerson or somebody do that. But he's got to do it. But it is we should all hope that it goes well. But it is very
well. That's
precarious.
Lost. You're right, really, and it sounds
well.
Pollyannish. But you know, even those of us who don't like this guy and don't trust this guy and know that he's a narcissist and a pathological liar, we can't be, and I don't think we are, rooting for him to fail, to say something stupid. The stakes are just way too high. It's just that we're not confident that he's going to be able to control himself.
You know, when Ivanka Trump was in Europe, it didn't go well. There was there were a lot of negativity from the people.
Right.
There. So there is some of that brewing.
I think that's an important question, how much protest will be. The other thing that I found stunning about this, and I don't mean to be petty here, but Jared Kushner is the person who's the lead in putting this trip together. Now, I'm sorry, but he doesn't have diplomatic experience. Why is Jared Kushner the lead in this, putting this trip together? And you also have the second problem that the State Department is still not properly staffed. And that gets very complicated. And
Why do you see that as petty? It seems pretty important to me. I don't know.
I just was stunned that the notion that Jared Kushner is the trip director for this trip, that's a really important position. And he just does not have, he may be a great business person, I don't know, maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but he does not have diplomatic experience.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we have letters, and then we'll move on to other topics as well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us for our panel discussion. We have letters. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. What's on your mind? We'd love to hear it. Panel at WAMC.org. Roseanne simply says, I'm hoping Trump gets lost in his trip and doesn't return. Steve makes this point.
I think point. With the orange hair, they'd find him. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, my God, did I see it again?
Steve says, so our most optimistic hope is not a disaster. Yeah. That's the bar.
Yes.
Not
really
a disaster.
That's really the bar.
Nora says, does it give anyone pause that apparently Manafort, Jared Kushner, and Ivanka are all clients of Mueller's law firm?
That is an important issue, and I don't know what the legal question is there. I mean, the legal issues are there because, in theory, you'd have to recuse. Now, he is taking two people. Mueller's taking two people with him, and they all resigned from the firm. But typically, you still have to wait a year, so I don't know how they're working that out. But it was known information, so I don't know how they're working that out.
But again, the thought on this guy. Is that he is fair and just and
squeaky clean.
Right. So we'll hope for the best in that situation, I guess. Jim writes, it just seems to me that Trump is too thin-skinned for politics, and if he thinks that this is the unfairest treatment ever accorded a politician, Julius Caesar? The Roman Senate didn't bother with impeachment. We
Abraham
welcome your
Lincoln
letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Well, I want to bring up Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, who this came out yesterday, a month before Donald Trump clinched the Republican nominations. One of his closest allies in the Congress made a politically explosive assertion in a private conversation on Capitol Hill with his fellow GOP leaders that Trump could be the beneficiary of payments from Russian President Vladimir Putin. McCarthy, the Republican from California, said, quote, there's two people I think Putin pays, Rohrabacher and Trump. That, according to a recording on the June 15th, 2016 exchange, which was listened to and verified by the Washington Post, Representative Rohrabacher is a California Republican known in Congress as a fervent defender of Putin and Russia. House Speaker Paul Ryan immediately interjected, stopping the conversation from further exploring McCarthy's assertion and swore the Republicans present to secrecy. The twist to the, not twist, but the follow-up to this morning is that McCarthy said that it was a joke. It was a joke gone wrong, and he apologized for that. Although the story does go on to say that as people immediately started to laugh, some of the lawmakers laughed at McCarthy's comment, then McCarthy quickly added, no, I'm serious. I said, no, swear to God.
Right. Right. And initially, everyone denied that that even happened. And they only admitted it was a joke when they were presented with the information that there was an audio tape. So they were denying it at first. That
didn't McCarthy run into a problem that cost him the speakership early on? And there was some sort of comment that he made back then. I'd have to look it up, but it just seems to me this is not the first time that his mouth has gotten him into trouble.
I'm also a little annoyed with Ryan for at one point saying we need to keep this quiet. We're all family.
No leaks. This is how we know we're a real family here. The remarks remained secret for nearly a year.
Right. So was it a joke or wasn't it a joke? In my experience, when someone says just kidding, they usually are not.
Yeah.
Well, and didn't say it in that, you know, in the context of it. He said, no, swear to God, I'm not saying he said it was he was concerned, but it certainly seemed that it was the comment came from a perspective of one who was concerned.
You know, I was in the newspaper business for 45 years, and from time to time, as I am doing now in retirement, I show up on radio shows, and I learned very early on, you just don't make a joke that could be misconstrued when there's a microphone, even if you think the microphone is off.
Oh, then we don't want you on the show anymore.
Oh, well, I tell you what, you may not think so, but I have to hold my tongue often when I'm here because I don't want to say the wrong thing, get us all thrown off the air. You just, these guys, let's give this guy the benefit of the doubt, and it was a joke. It was a stupid joke. He shouldn't say it because you know that these things are going to get out there.
But the context was that these Republican leaders were talking about this and were, it seemed to be seriously concerned mm-hmm. about Russian meddling in the election.
I'm sorry, Teresa, but the news had just broken the day before in the Washington Post that Russian government hackers had penetrated the computer network of the Democratic National Committee, prompting McCarthy to shift the conversation from Russia meddling in Europe to events closer to home. That was the context.
And I think this is incredibly disturbing, not surprising, but incredibly disturbing. I still don't understand why can't be a bipartisan agreement that there is a serious problem if the Russians are interfering with our elections. And that's not a joke, and it's not something if he had a concern that Trump, you know, was involved being paid by the Russians, why then did he back him? Well, because you know, his election was going well. But why? They knew Trump was a problem on so many different levels, yet they stood behind him then. They continue to stand behind him now. And I think it's just more evidence of a very serious problem.
Well, it's particularly problematic with what McConnell in the Senate and Ryan in the Congress have not said, because I don't see where it puts them at risk for them to more forcefully say the reports so far are troubling. We're not going to jump to any conclusions, but we need to treat them seriously and let's have an investigation. At the very least, that should tamp down some of the tinfoil hat people who think this is just a witch hunt. And the fact that they're not showing any leadership, you know, it just shows a lack of courage, in my opinion, and a lack of statesmanship, in my opinion. Where are the Republicans? And I'm certainly not the first to have said this. Where are the Republicans who are going to stand up, as did many Republicans during Watergate?
And what does it say about a leader in the Congress who has a knowing concern, deep concern about a candidate's involvement with the Russians, yet continues to back that candidate, and then now with overwhelming evidence about the problems that caused, continues to support and back him. And look what Ryan said yesterday. You know, there's some people out in response to the issues about the Comey memos. His first remark was, there are some people out there who want to harm the president.
Which, by the way,
I'm sorry, that was indefensible.
I have to say, I'm going to say one of the most cliched things that I know has been around for a long time. But I was at a doctor's appointment earlier this week, and I'm in the waiting room. And, you know, magazines and doctor's offices are old. Right. So I picked up a Time magazine and I was leafing through it. And there was this whole article about Ryan right before the campaign that he was going back and forth. He wasn't going to mention Trump's name. Right. He wasn't going to give him an endorsement. He went to his hometown. He was never going to bring it up. He didn't want. And then you hear that and you think, OK, well, where are you now?
Right. Right.
What happened?
What happened?
Well, he won, obviously. Trump won.
The money went to Trump and the votes went to Trump. And so he went to Trump because, you know, the only thing you can imagine, the assume, is that they are very focused on an agenda. Part of the agenda is to break up the entitlements. They are at a place where they'd wish to be for two decades, which is where the Republicans control the House and the Senate and the White House. And so he sees this as a path to moving his agenda. And so if he has to tolerate this behavior, he tolerates the behavior. But where's the line? And you would think the line is, you know, not a policy line, but a, you know, you think the line that shall not be crossed is meddling, the Russians meddling in our elections.
Well, that should be a line that should not be crossed. They're just small. They don't, I mean, I'm not a huge Chuck Schumer fan, although I agree with him more than I disagree with him. But I thought he gave a great speech the other night where he ended it by saying, history is watching.
Right.
This is important stuff. They, as you pointed out, you're talking about the Russians interfering with our election. It could conceivably continue through elections to come, or at least throw future elections in doubt. It tears at the very heart of our system.
Yeah, and that's the big issue that needs to be resolved. That is the, we can't lose sight of that.
Right.
This Russia in meddling in elections. That is, you can focus on Trump, that's separate. You can focus on whether or not his campaign was influenced directly. But we really do need to, as a country, look at that issue.
Especially when we see, I'm sorry, we're going to take a break here. But also, especially when we see what the effect was on the French election.
Exactly.
And also that we have elections coming up next year in the midterms. Okay, let's pause. Ray Graff is chomping in the bit. He can't wait to do the news for us. He's there. He's excited.
Chomping.
He's ready. He's chomping.
He's warming up his arm. He's pitching for the Mets tonight.
The Red Sox.
There you go. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. We have Teresa Bourgeois here. We have Judy Patrick and Ira Fussfeld. And we welcome your letters. We've got a lot of them. We're going to get to those in just a second. It's panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. This is, Teresa just showed me something during the break, that there is a florist in New York City who is taking flowers that he has not sold at the end of the day and then putting them in trash bins and arranging them as if a big vase on the table, and just I guess that's the ultimate random act of kindness, isn't
beautiful
it?
Beautiful flower arrangements all around the city. They just pop up, and it's just a nice, happy thing that's happening. I saw it last night. I happened upon it. It is beautiful. Just gorgeous flower arrangements.
I wonder how long before people steal the flowers.
In trash cans, he puts them on different monuments, and just to make people happy. So in the midst of all of the not so happy things that are going on.
Now, up here, what we have to do is just drive around, and we see flowers in our fields and on our roof. But the poor people in the city, they need to
look at their trash cans.
Well, I hate to say anything against flowers, but I'm doing a lot of sneezing and coughing.
Oh, I know. Yeah, the lilacs are out. Yeah. Right? That's for sure.
Well, I'd be glad if a florist did. Flash mob around my place. It's gorgeous. Anyway, a little happy thing.
Let's go to some letters. Joel writes, come on, Ira. You're more scared now and not when Mr. Obama delivered a pallet full of cash to Iran. Both parties are one and the same. I wish we would all realize that.
A pallet full of cash? Is that when they gave him their money back?
Yeah, when they gave him their money back.
That we'd been holding?
Right.
Without interest?
Winnie says, hi, panel.
Hello.
I took a look at Fox News yesterday to get a sense of what the other side was reporting. What came across to me is that the right wing is looking at our side as just being as nutty as we think they are. I was in my apartment alone and found myself doing eye rolls at the ridiculousness of what they're reporting. Apparently, they really believe what they're saying. They also believe that us lefties are way, way, way out there. The divide is huge. Well, indeed it is, which is why I think many, many times in this program we have urged people to tune in and to listen to Rush Limbaugh for a little while, watch Fox for a little while. It's quite interesting.
Well, I want to report to the fire department in Albany that there, even though there was smoke coming out of the TV set in the studio, it was because it was briefly on Fox, and Joe quickly changed it back to CNN.
Okay,
so immediately the smoke went away.
But I applaud her for doing that. I think that's so important that people, if you listen to Fox all the time, switch to listen to MSNBC, CNN, and if you're listening to MSNBC all the time, switch and listen to Fox and read Breitbart. And then I think you'll understand, you know, it's the way we're going to bridge this divide.
But, you know,
we really need to bridge this
divide. Look at what happened with Bret Stephens, formerly a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, switches to the New York Times and is now a conservative voice in the liberal New York Times. And his first column was not a climate change denier column, but it was a climate change questioning column. And the left exploded in outrage that this point of view was in their New York Times, up to and including, I don't know what the number was, but I will say many subscriptions were canceled as a result of that. So many that the publisher Sulzberger wrote letters to each of them saying, you know, we're just trying to expand our horizons and we want you to read the other point of view. So the left needs to be a little bit more tolerant of wrong word. The left ought to be listening to the right too, just as the right ought to be listening to the left.
Yeah, and I want people to read the Washington Post, read the New York Times, read their local newspaper, read, do more than just listen and watch and read.
And most of us who publish newspapers such as Judy's or when I was in the newspaper business, we try to have, we have to buy our columnists from syndicates. And I don't know what Judy's, although I'm pretty sure she does the same. We try to get a balance. We just don't buy all left-wing columnists or right-wing columnists because we know that many of the people who read our newspapers are not reading other newspapers and we want to offer all points of view. It's very important.
And I agree with you, Judy. It's so important. And The Economist right now is doing some fabulous writing, The Atlantic, The Guardian. But I spent 3 years, one of my jobs was to, all around the country, I put together events bringing together people of different views on the same issue in a room together with their federal elected official, their congressperson or their senator. And
The good old days.
The good old days, yeah. And, you know, for a year it was on the global spread of nuclear weapons, it was on budget policy, whatever. And it was really enlightening and important. I mean, I learned a lot, and I think people in the room learned a lot, because we do have to figure out a way to bridge this divide. And where it's not really us and them, we're all the same country. And with people with different views.
Well, that's why it's just particularly important as this Trump investigation proceeds that even now at the nation stages of this investigation that the right-wing media says, okay, we've got this guy Mueller in here. Everybody respects Mueller on both sides of the aisle. Let's see what he says, as opposed to, oh, here we go. You know, the die is cast because if the result of this investigation is negative to Trump and the right wing of this country does not accept it, I'm frightened about what might happen.
Yeah, and I think the left wing as well. I think they need.
Yes.
I think people are showing restraint. They're saying, let's wait until we get the facts, which is a very good approach.
But we need the right-wing media and the right-wing people who speak for the right-wing to say, okay, let's see what happens.
Jackie writes, I'm sorry, but I'm beyond rooting for Trump and hoping he makes good decisions and acts presidential. Sadly, I'm waiting for the ultimate mess-up so he'll be gone. But as Michael Che's Lester Holt said in the Saturday Night Live segment last week, nothing matters
nothing
anymore.
Matters.
Jim says, would a face value interpretation of McMaster's comment be that Trump didn't know because he hadn't been briefed?
Yeah, I think that that's in fact what McMaster's was saying. He was not saying that he didn't understand it. He was saying that the level of detail that he was being accused of conveying, he had not been briefed on that level of detail.
Or he'd been briefed on it and didn't retain it.
No, he was saying he had not been briefed on it. However, what I've read some of the experts say is that he did convey a sufficient amount of information that would allow the Russians to then connect dots, which many fear that they have done, and which, as a result of that, has put the people who gave us that information and all of us at much greater risk. I mean, this cannot be, underestimated about how dangerous that is, that mistake was, or miscalculation.
Wynn writes and says, Roger Ailes is gone, Bill O'Reilly is off the air, and the Trump administration is being torn asunder piece by piece. Is this what Trump meant by so much winning will be tired of winning? Because I ain't tired yet, says Lynn.
Well, that's one of the things about Atlantic Guardian that I referenced earlier. Is it possible that we have a lame duck president 4 months into his term?
George says, Teresa is obviously a process person, but the Trumps are not. That's what his base likes about him and them. It's a traveling show, and most of those meeting with him will be interested to interact with him for the first time. This in regards, I guess, to the foreign trip. Tracy writes, it was reported on Marketplace this morning, almost as an aside, that there will be a number of corporate business leaders as part of the contingency visiting at least Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure how normal that is for presidential international visits, but is it the first time I've heard of such a report?
Sometimes they take business people on trips. I don't know who's going with them. That's what I'd be interested
usually
to know.
Usually a contingent, right?
Yeah, I hope that his limo's driver is not a woman, because that will not work in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Women are not allowed to drive there.
But, you know, if he does take business people, maybe that's an effort to promote trade, to equalize the trade balance.
I think there are examples of business types coming with presidents on trips like these.
Right. That's not outside the norm.
All right, let's get back to topics. Again, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. There is so much news flying. We haven't even gotten to what was, a breaking story 11 hours ago, which is that the Trump team, the New York Times reported this, that the Trump team knew Flynn was under investigation before he came to the White House. They were aware of it. And said, yeah, come on, that's fine. Michael Flynn told President Trump's transition team weeks before the inauguration that he was under federal investigation for secretly working as a paid lobbyist for Turkey during the campaign, according to two people familiar with the case. Despite this warning, which came about a month after the Justice Department notified Mr. Flynn of the inquiry, Mr. Trump made Mr. Flynn his national security advisor. The job gave Mr. Flynn access to the president and nearly every secret held by American intelligence agencies. So if this report is true, Michael Flynn, in whatever type of meeting, job interview, or vetting that was done, said, I am under federal investigation. And somebody at some point said, oh, great, you're perfect.
I'll take two.
Right.
They clearly looked at the details and said they didn't care. They thought the FBI investigation was a witch hunt.
Now, do you think that this story, because we heard a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I don't even know anymore, that President Obama had warned?
Right. Let's get clear.
Donald Trump, very early, I think the day after the election, to be wary of Michael Flynn.
It's hard not to come to the conclusion that Flynn has got something on Trump. I mean, to this day, he speaks highly of Flynn. On the surface, it simply makes no sense. You wonder, how could he possibly have not wanted to distance himself by now? There's just got to be something that Flynn has, and that Trump is afraid to give him reason to talk about it.
Or this could be Trump's legendary loyalty, the fact that Flynn was an early supporter and stuck with him through thick and thin.
It is. Both are possible. I mean, the one thing about that story that we heard earlier this week regarding the conversation between the president and Jim Comey is that in asking about making the Flynn investigation go away, was that this was the day after he was fired. So to want that loyalty to say, I want you to lay off this guy who I just got rid of, it brings up questions that I guess can lead to both of your cases and points.
Right. Trump didn't appoint Giuliani, didn't appoint Chris Christie. There were other people, very strong players in his campaign, but he stuck with Flynn. And I think it is that strong loyalty. That's, I have no inside information, but that's my guess from looking outside.
Yeah, I would tend toward the loyalty issue. But it is amazing when the sitting president of the United States takes the step of warning the president-elect to, you know, you want to be very careful about this person, and that by all reports, the national security staff, Obama's national security staff, also warned them. Yet they did not heed those warnings.
Like, they left post-it notes in the drawers and stuff. Like, don't hire. I'm serious.
We don't
like,
want to give this man information.
Right, yeah.
They did not want to convey information. They reportedly did not want to convey. The Obama people were concerned, and the State Department and the people were concerned about conveying information to him because of what they knew about his involvement. And with Trump, you again, it gets back to the question of he doesn't know what he doesn't know. It doesn't seem that he has an understanding of the enormity of the implications of these problems. And I'm also fascinated by these Turkey connections. There's been so much discussion about the Russia connection and their involvement in our election, as well there should be, and it's very, very important. But there's also a growing focus and awareness about the Turkey connection. And it's come out that not only did he bring Flynn in, but Flynn was getting paid by the Turkish government at the same time that he was making recommendations to the incoming Trump administration to change Obama administration policies that were affecting Turkey. So he's being paid by the Turkish government, and he's changing policy at the same time in a way that represents not what the administration had been doing, but what the Turkish president wanted him to do.
So did Flynn say to them during his job interview, I'm being investigated by the FBI, or did he say, and by the way, I worked for Turkey and I did this and this? Was it just the FBI alert that the administration knew, or did they know the details of what he had actually done? Who knows?
Who knows, right?
Who knows? But I think that we're going to learn a lot more about these Turkey connections. And also, you've got to remember that the Trump family has a number of business ties to Turkey. They have new developments in Turkey, and they have investments by high-level people in Turkey in the Trump properties here. It's very as they say, you know, a tangle of foreign ties is one of the articles I read yesterday. And then you had the situation in Washington 2 days ago where the Turkish leaders' bodyguards were beating up protesters on the streets of Washington, D.C. It was stunning.
We have a few more letters. Jay writes, once the GOP Congress gets its agenda passed, they will throw the so-called president under the bus. Sue writes, why is no one pointing out that Putin personally requested that Trump meet with the Russian ambassador? Well, we have certainly brought that up on this show, and I believe it's been brought up regularly during the coverage.
And
but
he says he has tapes, right, of the conversation.
Yes.
They want to know what was said.
And that Trump brought him into the Oval Office. Well, not Putin.
No, the two ambassadors.
Yeah, with two ambassadors, not Putin. Symbolically, the move is disturbing, but also because it is so easy to drop surveillance gizmos between the cushions or whatever. Kathy writes, in keeping with his narcissism, Trump tweets, his witch hunt is the single greatest of any in history. By God, if there is a witch hunt for him, he wants it to be the greatest. Also, notice that everything he accuses others of, he is actually doing himself. I worked with a narcissist for years, and she did the same thing. It took years, but ultimately she was her own undoing. I know Teresa and I were corresponding yesterday after the speech at the Coast Guard Academy. It's hard to see somebody get up in front of a group of men and women who are ready to protect our coasts and honor our country, and have the President of the United States talk about himself and say that, and I won't say draft dodger, but to then turn around.
Well, there was that sore foot,
right,
heel. Couldn't remember which heel, but it hurt.
It was the right or left? I don't know. But anyway,
I don't know, but it hurt.
But then to turn around and to not honor those people, I wonder where the invitation, I don't know. Where the invitations,
you know, it's certainly
come from.
Not a time of inspiring presidential speeches.
No.
This was a commencement speech that he made about himself. Let me just, can I quote Bill Kristol, not the funny one, but the
well, the other one's funny sometimes.
Yeah, he can be funny sometimes.
The Weekly Standard. This is his tweet. Unseemly, unbefitting the office and the occasion, and pathetic. He should be impeached if only for this.
You're referring to the speech?
The Weekly Standard, yeah. Bill Kristol tweeted in the midst. It was stunning, the things that he said, the things that Trump said at that speech. But even more stunning is, I just assumed because I was hearing it, not watching it, and then I went back, he was reading those words. Somebody wrote those words for him.
Well.
And, or.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you write, right? You write for your deliverer.
He must. But that was planned. That was it would have been bad enough it was off the cuff, but to in a commencement speech, turn it to talking about how beleaguered he was and how people were attacking him, and it was just not proper.
But you know what? It's on the CNN ticker right now, so maybe there was some success with planting that in that speech because we're all talking about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, we have time for one more story, so let me just get to that real quick. And that is the fact. Well, I mean, one of the things that came out of that speech that I just want to touch on is that he'd been untreated fairly, unfairly. More than any other political figure.
And I think that's he always has to have something he's fighting against. And I think that that's going to be the line of attack. Just no matter what people say about him, he's going to talk about how bad the fake media is and about how unfairly he's being treated. And it's a witch hunt to try to discredit any of the facts that come out about him. But in the midst of this, you know, he needs to be governing the country. There's so many issues that need to be dealt with or focused on.
We are out of time. I want to thank everybody who wrote in. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Thanks to our panelist, Ira Fussville. Thank you very much.
Nice to be here.
See you soon.
I hope.
We'll check the calendar. Check the calendar. It's on the Y bulletin board. Judy Patrick, we thank you for coming in as well, doing double duty for Media Project and
you are welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much. And Teresa, we'll see you back on Monday.
Looking forward to
it. Excellent. We'll be back with the roundtable after this.